A jail stint can really disrupt someone's life. You can lose a job, a relationship, or thousands of dollars on fees, fines, and bail.
Have I ever gone to jail? Yeah, I just got out, actually.
If he doesn't show up to court, you gotta pay the $50,000.
No ring exchange, no kiss the bride. There's no glamour in a jailhouse wedding.
Off the Block. All six episodes tracing the path from city block to jail block and back are now available on KCRW's iTunes page.
From KCRW.com, I'm Bob Carlson, and this is Unfictional. A program of true stories and intimate documentaries. On this episode, we examine grime-covered buildings and walls to find messages. Some of it nonsense, some is beautiful, and some of it is an angry call for revolution. Producer Steve Urquhart returns to Unfictional and meets street artists who are risking their freedom and their lives to write political graffiti. Why do they do it? And what do they actually achieve? You're off on a trip to the streets of Paris and Barcelona, then on to Brazil. From KCRW.com, it's Unfictional and Graffiti, Paint and Protest.
I really like Sundays. Sunday is a very good day because all the shops are closed. So there's less people on the street, and people who are on the street, they're not stressed. They're just walking around. So Sunday mornings and afternoons, for me, it's the best time. Because at night, you have to be very quiet and you can be suspect if someone sees someone. Everyone's afraid of everyone. There's like a tension. So Sunday is more chill. Sometimes people would yell at you from a window when you're painting or pasting, like saying they're calling the cops and everything, but I just stop doing what I'm doing, I come back later.
It is actually really addictive. You get all this adrenaline rush when you're out on the streets and you're doing something that you know is illegal, but it's your way of expressing yourself.
You know, the walls are there and they should speak.
You write something in the street and thousands of people will see the message. This message will have an impact on people.
Graffiti can be a political tool.
Once you start tagging, it's really hard to stop.
We have messages against the dictatorship, against the brutality of the police. We have messages against corruption. There's a lot of commentary going on.
If you have something to say to the people, please say it, you know, write it in the street.
I'm Steve Urquhart. 2 years ago, I went to New York to meet some of the city's graffiti pioneers, people who, in the 1970s, were painting their names all over subway trains. They told me how they did it for fun. They weren't protesting. They were just being creative with spray cans. Artistic vandalism, as one put it. And yet, the story of modern graffiti goes so much further than artistic vandalism. Where are the political points, the social statements? Well, they're everywhere. They're not always obvious. They're not necessarily what you think they're going to be. And neither are the people behind them.
This is all my stencils. It's about 20 years of stencils, different stencils here. So
they've all just piled up.
They're not in any sort of... Oh, yeah, no, would you know where to find?
Yes, absolutely. In this big mess, I know where exactly where... No, really, I know where exactly where my stencils are. My real name is Xavier Proulx. And my artist name is Blake Lerat. In the early days, I was a kind of rebel. I was 30 years old. So I was still, I'm not a rebel anymore. I'm too old now. But I was a rebel in the 1981. So I was a rebel. I was against the police, of course. I was against the government. And I took the name of Blake Lerat because I was painting rats in the streets of Paris at that time. Paris is full of rats, like every city in the world. More rats in Paris than people living in Paris. So I wanted to say to the people, oh, you live in a beautiful city, but don't forget that in the basement it's full of rats and it's a society completely...
Society full of problems as well.
Yeah,
and, absolutely. And that you generally don't see unless you're looking for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Xavier was born in Paris. He went to art school, where he quickly became politically engaged. But he only really found his sense of purpose when he discovered stencil graffiti.
For me, it was a kind of therapy. At that time, I was very alone. I didn't see many people. I was very... I had a lack of identity, you know, inside of the city. I didn't know who I was exactly. I was looking for identity. And to me, to go outside and to put my name, to paint an image in the street and to write my name, even if it was not my real name, it was very important for me. Very, very important.
Why? Why was it therapy? What did it, how did it make you feel when you'd done it?
Because, you know, to live in the city is very difficult. It's very... I remember not to talk to anyone for... I used to take the subway and to feel completely isolated on the middle of people. It was terrible. I felt... I was not happy at all, you know. So it was to go outside and work in the street. It was a kind of reaction to this feeling of isolation.
So to paint on the wall, did that make you feel more connected to the city? Did you want to feel more connected to the people?
To the people.
And how does it make you feel more connected to the people?
Because to put an image on in the streets and come back the day after to watch people look, if the people was watching on my things, you know, on the wall, and it was very important for me, very, very important. And
seeing them reacting and perhaps interacting with your work, that's the acceptance that you craved.
I was so happy. I was so happy, you know. I felt some, like living, like a real human being.
So it made you want to do more?
Yeah, of course, it was a kind of drugs.
How much more? How often?
Every night.
Blake Lerat doesn't just paint rats.
No, this one is a soldier carrying a child in his hand. In 2003, I made a big campaign against the war in Iraq. I put many stencils in Paris, posters in Paris against the Iraq war. It was a part of the propaganda. It's a kind of propaganda we make, you know. Stencil, it's a very good tool for propaganda because you make one stencil and you can reproduce it 100 times. The more time you repeat it, the impact is important. Yeah, absolutely. And it's important to have an impact. It's a very important for us, you know, to have an impact on people. Yeah.
He's had a huge impact on people, not least the British artist Banksy. Blake Lerat has become known as the father of stencil graffiti. But he has a surprising confession.
I have to say that I don't... when I'm working illegally, I'm very paranoid, you know. I don't take any pleasure. Some artists take pleasure to paint the streets. It's a challenge for them to do it. For me, no. It's a fight. It's always a fight inside of me. I push me to do it. I'm afraid to be caught by the police. I'm afraid to be beaten by some guy in the street who don't like graffiti art.
In the middle of Paris, I meet another man who spends his days dodging the police and trying to avoid being beaten up.
I'm Sudi Ani, and for the past 3 years, I've been doing portraits of drag queens on the streets. 2013 was the year where we were trying to implement the law of equal rights to homosexual couples. That's when we saw millions of people in France going to the street and manifesting against the laws. So it was pretty much of a surprise, not only to French people, but to the whole world, to see this kind of reaction in France. So that was the starting point for me to talk about queer subjects and gender issues on my work. I said, that's what I can do as an individual, because street art is my domain, it's what I've been doing, it's what I know how to do it. This one, for example, is called the Grace Towers. What's very interesting about this guy is that he will wear a lot of makeup and he has this long beard as well. So yeah, it's pretty fascinating. It's very sexy, I would say.
Suriani has been a street artist for 15 years, but these dazzling, larger-than-life-sized portraits of contemporary drag queens are his most obviously political pieces to date.
I love doing it. And I really see it as a way of standing out for what I believe. Freedom of expression, gender, fluidity, and all that. The reaction I've had from the LGBT community is that they feel represented in a field that they hadn't been before, which is street art. So it's a way of getting visibility to the community.
Saying, I am here. You need to know that I'm here.
Yeah, and we're not only hidden inside the clubs and bars. The famous we're here, we're queer.
Usually, if you see political graffiti in France, it's about terrorism, capitalism, corruption, migration. But this series of portraits is unlike any street art I've ever seen. The message is bold, vibrant, flamboyant.
They will last not very long.
Suriani leads me around some of his favourite sites, where he pastes up these massive images with cheap, homemade glue. Doing it this way, rather than painting a wall from scratch, is quicker and it's safer.
Most of my gay friends in Paris, they have suffered violence in the streets. So for me, it is kind of a risk to do it in the streets, because we never know who we're going to walk through. But I think this risk is part of the work. Like, the visibility of the work is also my visibility being in the streets doing it. I don't know if it's clear.
Yes, that is. You've got the risk of doing the street art, and then you've got the risk of what the subject is as well.
Yeah, but I think the reasons why I'm doing this are more important than this risk. And the fear, I mean, when you start doing it, you forget the fear, you just do it.
I'm Steve Urquhart. This is Graffiti, Paint and Protest. And from Paris, on to Barcelona.
Soy Rock Black Block, o esta es mi firma, mi personaje, y nada, tengo 40 años.
This is Rock Black Block. He paints massive murals that take up entire walls intended to highlight social movements. One was on the side of a building occupied by squatters with the slogan Popular Power. It became the image associated with the squatters' fight to remain in the building, a fight they won.
Siempre he intentado no poner por delante la legalidad o ilegalidad como.
His words are translated.
I don't use if it's legal or not as a criteria for doing it. I create messages to denounce these situations that should be illegal because I want to give them a response.
Why is it okay to be critical on the city's walls, to actually write on the city your criticism? How can you justify that?
I mean, I never consider if I have the right or I don't have the right. I'm a muralist. I work on murals. I do graffiti. I come from the social movement. And for me, the important thing is not the justification. You know, the walls are there and they should speak. A wall that is a gray wall can become something with content, a place to dialogue with other people, and I don't consider that to be a problem. On the contrary, I think it's something really good. Graffiti can be a political tool.
In France and in Spain, graffiti seems to have become much less tolerated, even just in the last few years. Street artists talk about harsher penalties, pieces getting scrubbed off walls in a matter of hours, a real tightening of the laws. In Brazil, the laws are much more complex. Lots of traditional street art is now legal, not just tolerated, but celebrated, even if it carries a message of protest. But it's nowhere near as widespread as a very different, dangerous, illegal style of graffiti tagging that's exploded over the past 30 years across São Paulo and Rio de Janeiro.
The first thing that caught my attention was seeing that it wasn't simply like some scribbling on a wall, that actually the letters, they had a harmony or a lack of harmony, or they have a composition, or they had an attitude, or they look almost like the skeletons of cartoons. They took originality seriously.
It's Thursday evening and it's just starting to get dark. I'm right in the center of São Paulo, near Praça de República, and I'm approaching a huge group of loud, very enthusiastic people. There must be about 200 to 300. Most of them are young, they're almost all male. They're standing, drinking, talking, passing notebooks around. At the end of the street, I can see about 4 or 5 police cars keeping an eye on things. And if I look up, not just in this street, but in pretty much any street in São Paulo, if I look up at the buildings right up to the top, the buildings are covered. Almost every blank space between the windows, quite often the windows themselves, the doors, the shop signs, they're all painted with thick black writing. I've no idea what it says, and I'm told that many of the locals don't know what it's meant to say either. But this group of people here, they know exactly what it says, because they wrote most of it. Então vou pichar no sapatim, polícia sai do pé que eu vou gastar minha colojinha.
Então vou pichar no sapatim, polícia sai do pé. The thing about the tag is where you place it. The more risk it poses to the artist's life, the more street cred you get.
It's the most high, the most difficult place. Let people imagine how the guy put the tag on that place. You know, this is the magic of pichação.
Pichação, or picho, is like an extreme form of graffiti tagging. Those who write it, the pichadores, they climb the outsides of buildings. They pull themselves up by window ledges, floor by floor. Then they write their names and draw their symbols, usually with paint rollers. Sometimes they even dangle themselves upside down from rooftops. It's as risky as it sounds.
The graffiti artists, they come from many different backgrounds. But the taggers, usually they come from a more humble kind of background. And what they want is, all they want is to really just leave their mark in the world. Just put their names and say, I'm here and I exist.
This is Nina Kinigani. She runs the Rio Street Art Tour.
Unfortunately, some people actually died trying to do their tags. They're either like really up high in a viaduct passing over a super busy lane and they might fall, or in a super high building trying to tag on top of the window of the highest floor. Even with the police, if they see someone tagging, they shoot first and ask questions later.
Thursday is when many of São Paulo's 5,000 pichadores get together for their weekly meeting. I've been invited by Joan Correa, an art dealer who's following the movement.
Thursday night is like putting your thumb in the pulse of the picture movement. Is
without having to actually climb up a building and hang off it.
Yeah, that's
the nearest that we're going to do.
Yeah. And this is the point where they are planning an attack. They're discussing the way of doing a new letter in a particular font. They're discussing somebody who is new in the movement or something unfair that the police did. Anything that's somehow causing waves, be it political, be it social.
Juan introduces me to several pichadores, including a man in a wheelchair who broke both of his legs after falling from a building. Although, that doesn't seem to have put him off. We go to a cafe across the road to talk to one of the group's leaders.
Eu sou Cripta Dijan, pichador há 20 anos. Tive a infância na periferia.
Cripta Dijan Iveson has been a pichador for 20 years. He tells me how he started at the age of 12, growing up in the suburbs of São Paulo, the son of a single mother, learning to defend himself on the street.
Can you remember the first time that you did it and what that felt like?
He says he and a friend were caught painting someone's house. They were chased, dragged to the floor, and had their faces painted as punishment. He says it was humiliating, but that it felt like a baptism, and that it chained him to the Pichot movement.
Has that happened to you again, that you have been painted after having been caught?
Aconteceu, mas foram poucas vezes.
Only a few times, he says. One thing he's learned is how not to get caught. But lots of pichadores do get caught. Over in Rio, which has its own distinct picho scene, the photojournalist Clarissa Pivetta tells me she's seen the authorities do exactly the same thing to her friends.
They normally take the spray can and paint all the body of the guy. Take it off the clothes. They know it's very difficult to take the paint off the skin.
Because this is
really
thick acrylic paint, isn't it?
It's difficult to take it
but
off.
But where would they do that? Just right there on the street at the time? Or
The last time that I am saying to you, it was here in the center of the city on Sunday afternoon. The securities taking the guys and painting them. Lay down and shh. It's terrible. Humiliating, you know?
So why would anyone keep doing this kind of graffiti? Above all, it's to be seen, to be noticed. This is a generation that feels unrepresented, pushed aside, invisible. I'm here. Don't ignore me. There's no question that they're changing the physical landscape, but what about the social and political scene? I meet Marcelo Lins, who's better known on São Paulo's walls as Juim.
My picho is Juim, 30 years, and make picho here.
Juim is one of the pioneers of the pichador movement. He tells me very proudly how he was the first to paint upside down from a rooftop. He's generally considered to be a picho legend. In fact, we keep getting interrupted by fans who call him the originator, the icon of picho. But now, in his mid-40s, after 3 decades of writing on buildings, Juim wants to go into proper politics by standing in local elections.
Eu fui convidado por pessoas que são somente políticas, para fazer parte de movimento que você está acompanhando.
He believes people are feeling a lack of politicians who actually represent them. That Brazil needs politics for the people, not politics for politicians. That because of all the volatility and uncertainty this year, there's a massive opportunity to change the image of politics and of Pichot.
If you become a politician, can you continue being a Pichador?
Juim says this might be difficult, but thinks he can convince people of the positive benefits of Pichot, of graffiti, of all street art.
So you would continue? You would still climb buildings and paint them?
He points at his stomach.
Look at that. I can't.
We're gonna rule the world, don't you know, don't you know? We are gonna rule the world, don't you know, don't you know? We're gonna put it together.
Don't you put it together.
Despite claiming the support of his fellow pichadores, Juim might struggle to persuade the vast majority of the public. Most people don't seem to get Pichot, let alone accept it. They see it as ugly, destructive, meaningless vandalism, and certainly not as art. But some galleries are starting to show an interest in Pichot. Back in France, it was only after 25 years of painting political and social graffiti that Blec Le Rat was embraced by the art world, and now his pieces sell for thousands of pounds.
Street artists, we belong to a very important movement of art. I really believe that this is the most important movement in art of all time, you know. When you count such a number of street art created everywhere, every day, all over the world, thousands and thousands, which is absolutely incredible. And I'm sure we are living now the beginning of street art. Street art started 40 years ago in New York and Philadelphia, but we are still living the beginning. I'm sure in 20 years, 50 years, artists will still work in the streets, absolutely. I'm sure about that.
We're gonna rule the world, don't you know, don't you know? We are gonna rule the world, don't you know, don't you know? We're gonna put it together.
Graffiti, Paint and Protest was presented and produced by me, Steve Urquhart. It was a Falling Tree production for BBC Radio 4.
On KCRW's Unfictional, that was Graffiti, Paint and Protest. Thanks, as always, to Alan Hall and Falling Tree Productions in the UK for bringing that story to us. On our episode page, you can find some incredible photos taken by producer Steve Urquhart of the places he saw. And while you're there, you'll find our entire program archive, including a few other stories produced by Steve Urquhart. It's at kcrw.com/unfictional. Hey, and if you like this program, please leave us a nice review on iTunes. It helps other people find the show. I'm Bob Carlson, producer of Unfictional. The editor is Nick White. The associate producer is Carla Green. Please follow the show on Twitter @Unfictional or like us on Facebook. And I hope you'll join me next time for Unfictional from KCRW.com.